Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for all of your emails and communications, more and more people getting in touch saying, by the way, Howard, I've been listening for years and this is the first time that I have connected with you. Somebody recently told me that he was listening for 10 years and has just got in touch. Really nice to hear from you. Know that every single email gets seen and digested by me, and if your email requires a response, then it gets one. You can always email me through the website, theunexplained.tv, follow the link and send me an email from there. Thank you to Adam, my webmaster, for keeping it all ticking over, for making sure that the shows get out to you and that the website is duly maintained. The guest on this edition of the show, I'm not going to speak for very much now because I think you may know who this person is. If you're listening to this show, there's a strong chance I think you do. Dr. Stephen Greer, a man who has devised a protocol, as you will know from past shows and maybe if you've heard him elsewhere, where all of us, you, me, everybody, if we want to, can connect with ET. Now, it's controversial, of course it is. Some people swear by it. Some people think that this is the way forward. And of course, some people, like all of these things, deride it. So in the next hour, you make up your own mind about this. Dr. Stephen Greer, with an update on his work, and we'll be talking specifically about his new documentary, which I've just finished watching and greatly enjoyed, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. Now, if you saw the Spielberg movie, which most of us have, you'll remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind. But what are Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind? And how might they influence the world in which we live, should we be able to achieve them? Questions for Dr. Stephen Greer coming right up here on The Unexplained. Remember the website, theunexplained.tv. Follow the link. Send me a message from there. If you want to connect with the Facebook page, then please do that. That's growing all the time. It's the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. Okay, let's get to the United States now and say a welcome return to Dr. Stephen Greer. Thank you for coming on my show, Dr. Greer.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be with you again.
Now, for people, and there are some who may not have heard you in the United Kingdom before, how would you describe yourself, Dr. Greer? Would the term ufologist cover it? I tend to think
I'd rather be tortured with bamboo shoots than to be called a ufologist. So first of all, no such thing exists. I'm an emergency doctor, and then I founded the Disclosure Project and the CE5 Contact Initiative back in 1990, and I do a very high-end research on the subject and briefings for U.S. presidents and other folks, and of course did the 2001 National Press Club event that had nearly a billion people watching, that launched the global disclosure movement that's of course been building steam, and of course, as you know, in the last couple of years has broken into the mainstream regular media pretty heavily, although with a spin on it that we need to talk about. So, I don't regard myself as a ufologist because it's simply a wrong term, and there's no such thing. I always laugh at these terms that people come up with, like UAP is the new buzzword. But in reality, they're not unexplained. They're not aerial, strictly, and they're not a phenomenon, like ball lightning's a phenomenon. So, the intelligence community comes up with these fake monikers, names, appellations, that are designed to be deceptive. Like the word UFO was concocted back when they knew they were extraterrestrial vehicles. And the people I know inside the National Security Agency and elsewhere, they call them ETVs. Mm-hmm. Because what's a UFO, an unidentified flying object? Well, when they came up with that term, they knew they were not unidentified. They knew what they were. They were not flying, because flying connotes like Howard Hughes with his aircraft, and not the other one, not you, or Boeing, or the aerodynamics. So these terms are always designed to create maximum obfuscation and to hide what the truth is. And so I always find it quite funny that the public gets colonized in their minds with these terms, which are completely been designed by very smart people, frankly, in the intelligence community who know how to divert away from just being clear on what we're talking about. So I deal with two things. I deal with the Disclosure Project and extraterrestrial intelligence, as well as the associated man-made so-called UFOs that are coming out of the Lockheed Skunk Works and Northrop Grumman, my uncle's old company, and some other contractors. And I deal with the global initiative to start contact with these civilizations by citizen ambassadors, and that's called the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind initiative. And if the folks that are in Great Britain, if you have Amazon Prime, both Unacknowledged, which was a documentary that came out 3 years ago, and Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind are now on Amazon Prime, so you can see those. And the idea behind the latter project, the CE5 contact initiative, is to bypass the government and have people empowered and to learn the techniques to make contact with these civilizations directly. And now we have hundreds of thousands of people now around the world doing this, having extraordinary experiences, because we feel that it's time for the people to take this subject over and not leave it in the hands of the buffoonery of governments.
In the documentary Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, which I watched this afternoon and greatly enjoyed here, one of the most moving parts of it, Dr. Greer, is when you have people from every part of the world checking in, saying that they're using your protocol to make contact. There's a group of people in Australia, there's a guy in Japan. I mean, there are people all over the world, and it was a great idea to be able to do that at the end of it, because it shows that what you have, and I know you don't like the word, but it's a phenomenon. Now, you say at the beginning of the documentary, and I wrote this down, so I hope I'm quoting it correctly, the same people who lied about ETs are now framing the ET presence as a threat. What does that mean?
Well, as you know, since the 1950s, once they confirmed how these objects are operating, October 1954 is when we reached gravity control with man-made objects that look like UFOs. And they decided they needed to create, and I have a CIA document signed by the director of the CIA, Mr. Smith, at that time, talking about the psychological warfare value of the UFO subject. And what he was referring to, and which has been confirmed by Wernher von Braun's assistant, Carol Rosen, and others, is that in order for the military, industrial, financial, laboratory complex to grow after the Cold War ended, which they had always planned, and after global terrorism winds down a little more, is that they need to have another boogeyman. They need to have another enemy. And the big one that they've been holding back for 70 years is to hoax an alien threat. And this has been, we have many people on the inside who said, yes, no one inside the system believes that these civilizations are a threat, because anyone with, an IQ over mud would look at the technologies that are associated with these interstellar vehicles and know that if they were hostile, our civilization would have been terminated the instant we thought of detonating the first atomic weapon at the Trinity site in New Mexico at White Sands. So what we have is a situation where the people, what I call the foxes of secrecy that have been guarding the hen house for 70 years plus, are now pivoting towards releasing more and more information under what I call the disclosure that serves secrecy. In 1999, I wrote a paper about how the intelligence community and military would eventually pivot towards a disclosure of the subject, but in a way that frames it as a national security threat, quote unquote. Now you're seeing Senator Marco Rubio, who just left as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, certainly the Trump administration. I have people who are very close friends with the Vice President Pence and Trump who told me that they had been brainwashed by these same agents, that this was a threat. And of course, we ended up with the Space Force. And now we have the mainstream media, the New York Times, CNN, all of them lockstep, you know, covering, you know, this thing that happened where our Navy jets in America filmed this Tic Tac, this object off the coast of California. And of course, in every single article, without exception, they report on it. The Pentagon confirms it's real. And then there's the narrative that gets embedded, sometimes subtly and sometimes not so subtly, that they're concerned about the national security threat. Now, in the last 48 hours, I've spoken to two people with contacts inside the intelligence community who have told me that the reason they're doing that is that if it's presented as something other than a threat, there's no way to get more money for the defense establishment. And these are insiders. So this is all the biggest hoax ever. It makes the Dick Cheney convincing Secretary of State Colin Powell to go to the UN with weapons of mass destruction, vials of poisonous stuff at the UN that got us into the disastrous Iraq war and misadventure that's cost millions of lives and $2 trillion U.S. taxpayer dollars and quite a bit of Great Britain's treasury as well. Those same people are the masterminds behind what has happened since Unacknowledged came out. So I want to give you a timeline. Unacknowledged, which is an expose of the national security state involvement with this, which is also up on Amazon Prime and many other sites, eventually went viral on a bunch of pirated sites and had had over 650 million people see it globally. Because of that, the intelligence community, through their cutouts, operatives formed a thing called TTSA with a rock star that I had mentored, Tom DeLonge of Blink-182, and they began to release materials that got onto the front page of the New York Times and on CNN and everywhere else, but with this peculiar narrative of the national security threat. And that is really what the current zeitgeist is all about. Well, we're doing everything.
Can I just jump in briefly, Dr. Greer,
sure.
though?
Yeah,
I mean, look,
sure.
I hear what you say and I find it fascinating, but I spoke to a lot of the people who were behind that, including Leslie Cain at the time, and I haven't been able to get to speak to anybody at the Stars Academy. I've put in multiple requests and I'm still trying, but were they portraying it in the stories as a threat, these things as a threat? I think the pilots themselves, like David Fravor, were saying these things can outperform the equipment that we're using. They've clearly got equipment that we haven't got. The threat element of it is
which
the
is
Advanced Aerial Threat Intelligence Program. So threat is part of the investigation, is part of the curiosity, I suppose. Now, that's the story we were told.
Well, but you have to think, let's unpack that for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the people who see it firsthand, you know, like a jet pilot. Remember, a jet pilot is not going to be read into, which is military speak for briefed, on unacknowledged special access projects, which are very black, super secret projects that deal with extraterrestrial vehicles and UFO-related technology. So they're just going to report what they see. You then see in the articles this spin, and it's in every single bit of news coverage on Fox News, on CNN, about the concern of it being a national security threat. This is the early launching of an official disclosure, but that pivots it in the direction that Wernher von Braun, who, for those who don't know, you know, invented the V-2 rocket for Adolf Hitler that bombed London in World War II, who then became a key person in our aerospace industry and projects, but in America, but he warned on his deathbed that this was the long-term plan, and now we're seeing it unfold before our very eyes. And the reason that happened is because they wanted to grab the narrative back from Unacknowledged. Now, that's why we did rather quickly this Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind documentary, which is a two-hour feature film that's crowdfunded, and I want to thank everyone who contributed to that. We have no corporate sponsors. This was all done by 5,000 or so people contributing over $900,000 to make this documentary and get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
But we did it because we felt it was very important that the civilization see another side of humanity, that not everyone is some saber-rattling kook wanting to launch the planet into World War III. So
let's get it absolutely straight then. In your belief, and you say that you've briefed presidents about this, ETs as we know them, or as we think we know them, they're a benign presence. They're a potentially helpful presence. They cannot, as far as you would see it, in any stretch of the imagination, be construed a threat.
Well, they're a threat to what? Are they a threat to the military covert programs wanting to have dominion in space and putting weapons in space? Yes, they're a threat to that, because that should be stopped. Are they a threat to the Earth and humanity? Absolutely not.
Why don't the ETs override the military complex?
Well, if they were to do that, they would be immediately portrayed on CNN and the New York Times and the Sunday Times as an alien invasion. It's like that horrible alien invasion week on the History Channel and all that rubbish. So they're smart. Look, if I have figured out with my mediocre intelligence as a human, these civilizations that are very advanced have certainly figured out that the powers that be that control the mainstream media and the narrative would pivot immediately to anything overt that the ETs did as evidence of an invasive, hostile alien presence. So they're wanting us people, we the people, mm-hmm. to disclose the subject truthfully, but also to make peaceful contact with them. Now, when I say that they are not hostile to humanity or the Earth, that is demonstrably true. It is not true that they are happy with all the things we are doing. For example, we have, since 1965, had platforms or satellite-type objects in space mm-hmm. that are, of course, unmanned, but that have very advanced electronic weapon systems on them that target and have downed ET craft. And by the way, from Roswell forward, those so-called accidents were not accidents in the least. You don't go through interstellar space and somehow can't navigate a thunderstorm in New Mexico. So this is a big problem that never gets talked about honestly. We're trying to be sure that people understand what's really at stake here, but also that so part of the secrecy has to do with this whole agenda that benefits, as Eisenhower called it, the military-industrial complex. The other part of it is that they don't want the public to know that these aerospace contractors, which my uncle worked for, and he was the guy who was one of the engineers that built the lunar module that landed on the moon with Neil Armstrong, they don't want the public to know that the very advanced black projects, engineering and projects and reverse engineering projects in those sectors figured out how these things were flying into so-called anti-gravity and zero-point energy back in the 50s, which means you and I don't need to be using petrol. And we don't need the petrol dollar, and we don't need coal, and we don't need public utilities. Well, there goes a few hundred trillion dollars in the asset base of the global elites. So this is a very big issue. And so the only way they feel they can manage it is to posit it, frame it as a threat. And the next thing we're going to work on, and we want to do this prior to the Director of National Intelligence has been ordered in the COVID bill that was signed on December 27th in the United States. He has been ordered to provide a report to the Senate Intelligence Committee and other oversight committees in the Congress by the end of June, on the UFO issue. And we know already from people we have on the inside that that's going to be part whitewash, part true, but it will be framed and picked up as a, quote, threat to the national security. Because the people who want to see a growing defense budget really can't justify it. You know, as Leon Panetta, the CI director for a time for President Obama said, you know, we were spending $110 billion a year chasing 70 Al-Qaeda members in Afghanistan. And he said that publicly. Go look it up. So in order to aggrandize and enrich the warmongers and the war profiteers, you've got to have a boogeyman. You've got to have a big enemy. And the psychological preparation for there being a threat is what's been going on, frankly, for 70 years, but it's been on the fringes.
And Dr. Greer, what you were saying just before we get into the mechanisms of trying to contact, in inverted commas, ET, what you were saying about the military-industrial complex, they're portraying this as a threat. essentially to further their own existence, to keep themselves going. So they want to portray E.T., aliens, whatever, as something that is deleterious to us for their own ends. Some people might call that a conspiracy theory. What would you say to that?
Well, that's, of course, the new slander that you call anyone who exposes corruption in the government and in the establishment, right? So, no, it's not a theory. We can prove it. I mean, I have 950 top secret military intelligence corporate witnesses who span the whole era from the 40s to now. Of course, some of them have passed away, that have given us information, direct testimony, documents. So this is not a theory. I think the other part that I didn't get to, because it was a very brief segment, is that this is also very important if you want to establish a sort of global totalitarian control over a population. How do you unite the world? As Ronald Reagan said, we use this clip in our documentary, when Ronald Reagan was at the UN, and he had been similarly brainwashed with this information. He said our job of creating a world unity would be so much easier if we faced a common alien threat. Well, so this narrative has been going on for decades. And I think that it is a complete, it is not only a lie, but a damn lie, and the most dangerous lie, and it's a very dangerous game being played. But there are people who would benefit from that, because think about it. If you look at the clip of Goebbels on the trial after World War II, Adolf Hitler's propaganda czar, and he was asked, how did you really control the population to go along with this crazy cultish nonsense? He said, it was easy. He was very glib. You go look at this clip. We just created fear. We created mass fear. So through fear, I mean, look what happened in America after 9/11. They took that tragedy and turned it into fear, and then got us under false intelligence and hoaxed information into a disaster in Iraq. And this is what we have to be very careful of. So it's not a conspiracy theory. The Vietnam War, for example, was by us either staging or exaggerating the attack on our ships in the Gulf of Tonkin. Go look this up, those of you who don't know the history of the Vietnam War. And that stampeded the American public into fear, but also demanding that we expand the war in Vietnam, which ended up being an unmitigated imbroglio and quagmire and disaster. So, you know, we have to learn from these experiences. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory to pull back and ask some very hard and skeptical questions about the motivations of people whose job it is to scare the hell out of people. And I think that's unfortunately what's going on this subject. It's nine parts of nonsense and fear and a little bit of light in it, which is why I really don't prefer to be associated with ufology per se.
Okay. And as you say, these segments are reasonably short, but I think just to bring this to the point of the exercise, and that is trying to get the population of the world to circumvent all of these other people and make direct contact, which is what the aliens want. That, of course, assumes that the aliens are not an amorphous group of various races, as we're often being told. That assumes that there's some kind of federation out there that we can, you know, if we are able as individuals to reach them, there's some kind of federation and there's a common approach to things. Is that so?
Well, there is a common approach to things. I mean, obviously, when you're dealing with civilizations that have the ability for interstellar travel, you're not dealing with, you know, a bunch of people running around with clubs and spears knocking each other in the head, and it's not cowboys and Indians in space. I mean, even humans at our primitive state right now have something called the United Nations and international councils that try to resolve conflicts. So certainly these civilizations are at least socially advanced to that point. But I think that yes, they do, and they work in a cooperative way. And people I know who've had contact experiences have been often seen them working together, different species on the same craft or during similar events. I think that the other question that I always tell people is that what if they were hostile? What if one or two or five of these groups were? I don't think they are, but let's say they were. Do you really think that through a laser system or a weapon system, you're going to resolve that problem. Because even what we had in the early 50s with the hydrogen bomb, thermonuclear weapons, would destroy all life on Earth. When you're dealing with interstellar technologies, if they were overtly hostile and those were to be deployed in a conflict, it would be over in a nanosecond. So regardless of your belief, or I should say addiction to conflict and what have you, the wise path forward is for humans to make peaceful contact with these civilizations, enter into a dialogue, develop a rapprochement between the military and other interests and these civilizations, and go forward into space peacefully. And I'm having very high-level discussions in people in Russia and other countries who 100% agree with that. A gentleman who trains the cosmonauts in the Soviet Union, Timofey Igorov, is working with us, and he says 100% that everyone knows this. It's only in sort of the US-UK axis that everyone thinks that there's some alien threat we need to fight. They just think that we're silly.
But if it is possible, Dr. Greer, to circumvent those powers, and to use our own consciousness, which I know is what you talk about in the documentary. In fact, that's what you've always talked about, to use our own abilities to make contact with ETs. Won't the powers down here, who've been calling the shots up to now, take against that and cause it to be stopped?
Well, they've been trying for years, as you know. I mean, we've had all kinds of countermeasures that have occurred at events that I've conducted, up to and including a energy weapon being fired at Mount Shasta at a luminous craft object that wasn't quite 3D approaching us at very low altitude. And, the object dematerialized a nanosecond before this object was fired, that then crashed into the forest in front of us.
So they don't fire back? They don't fight back?
Oh, well, no. I mean, obviously, if they did, it would be like a group of cavemen with spears going up against a B-2 stealth bomber. I mean, it's ludicrous, laughable.
You've said, haven't you? I mean, you know, when we were setting this up, you mentioned that, you know, you're under constant scrutiny. There's a story that you tell in the documentary about how you were, and this is some years ago, you were taken aside or taken away by the National Security Agency, and they basically tried to, you say, subvert what you were doing.
Well, that's been going on since the early 90s. I mean, when I was a very young doctor, as an emergency doctor, doing this sort of as a public interest effort back in the early 90s, one of the things that led to me getting involved with people like the CIA director and others since the early 90s was that we made contact with four ET craft that materialized near Pensacola, Florida. It ended up on the front page of the Pensacola paper, and the next thing you know, I have the head of Army Intelligence and members of the NSA contacting me saying, "What the hell do you think you're doing?" And that was in 1992, in the spring of 1992, and now almost 29 years ago. So what I have found is that these groups really were very alarmed that we had sort of unpacked the sort of Rosetta Stone, or deciphered the Rosetta Stone of interstellar contact and communication, using the consciousness field and coherent thought and these techniques, because interstellar civilizations have electronic devices that interface seamlessly with the consciousness field and very directed, clear thought, which is the foundation of the CE5 contact protocols. And actually, we have a new app out. It's called CE5 Contact. You can get it on your app stores. And it trains you through the whole process of the meditation, how to do the remote viewing, how to set up a team. And, you know, we have now people all over the world doing that in teams that are having extraordinary experiences. But they were very unhappy, I can tell you. In fact, I was directly threatened because we were doing this, and it was taken very seriously. This ended up getting kicked up to some people in Washington who, by 1993, were very close to President Clinton and his CIA director, and I was invited to come up there to brief the director of the CIA because the president and the CIA director had been denied access to these unacknowledged projects. So something that astonished me at the time, but now in retrospect, it makes complete sense. But I think that that is why the most powerful thing people can do if they want to end the secrecy is to simply go over the heads of the military and the intelligence community, because yes, they can monitor and interrupt things that I do, mm-hmm. because I'm sort of the, unfortunately, the tip of the spear. But I think when you have millions of people doing it, they don't have the assets to shut all that down. And that means that, we, if we have millions of people doing this, it has two effects. One, it overwhelms their ability to stop it. And number two, when that many people enter into a state of consciousness and quiet consciousness together, there have been studies that have been done, the so-called Maharishi effect, where when about 1% of the population does that, the entire society, who don't even know they're doing it, begin to order, be more orderly and peaceful. Emergency department visits go down, violence goes down in a city. So we have that collectively. I really believe in the power of the people, the power of the grassroots.
And indeed, you power. Reference very powerfully in the documentary the strength of the civil rights movement, how a group of people with one common end are able to make a change. Now, I'm saying this in all sincerity, Dr. Greer, and I mean it. You know, I've been a journalist, of course, and doing hard news for many years, but this is my passion. This is my great interest. You know, I have a large park. I'm very lucky in this awful time of lockdown to be, you know, to have the ability to go and walk in a park if I want to. Using the protocols for CE5, as you call them, would it be possible for me to summon ET? In other words, to bring a craft or something that would come to me, that would communicate with me, and maybe if I could get some other like-minded people together. Are you saying that if I use the protocols and I did it with sincerity, I would be guaranteed to make the contact?
Well, guaranteed would be ridiculous for anyone to say, because there are too many variables that I can't control for. I would say there's a very high likelihood that if you're doing it for the correct reason, and these civilizations take an interest in you. Now, a correct reason is not wanting to have them perform something for you like dolphins at SeaWorld. It's because you're genuinely, in your heart and soul, want to make contact with these civilizations for something greater than yourself, something greater than your own aggrandizement and entertainment.
Well that would be the motivation. Otherwise, what is the point?
Trying to set the ethical construct for this for it to be successful. Mm-hmm. So then, if you do that, there's a good chance that some kind of phenomenon would occur. Now, that may be something in 3D very briefly. It may be a sphere that comes in and vanishes. It may be something that looks like a subtle hologram. It could be an ET that materializes right beside you, touches you, and then vanishes. We've had all of these things happen. If you look at this documentary, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, you'll see there was a man with me a couple years ago, Ed Moen, who had had a hearing loss since he was a very young chap, I guess when he was in his teens. And this ET appeared that we have a photograph of. Beside him, and he had contact with that ET, and the ET reversed his hearing loss that he had for 50 years. So I think that, you know, all kinds of things can happen if there is a sincerity and integrity and pure-heartedness in the approach, and also unprejudiced. What I have found is that many people, because they've been brainwashed by the rubbishing of the subject, as Lord Hill Norton said, in the tabloids and in ufology, but if they're not prejudiced about, you know, oh, I'm only going to make contact with the ones that look like they're from Norway, and the ones that don't look like humans, we don't want any to do with, because, you know, basically you're being a racist at that point. You mentioned the civil rights movement. I think, by the way, a lot of the narrative associating with this subject in the mythology is squarely centered in racism, except it's not racist between human species and racist. It's an interstellar type of racism that's being deployed, and I think it's obnoxious. But I think that if you do that, you could be in a city. If you look at the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind documentary, you'll see that there are some of the images are right there in Orange County or over downtown LA from CE5 groups that are doing the protocols, and they're quite impressive. Now, here's a risk. You, if you're doing that and it's over an area that's populated, it's possible that there could be some kind of, very quick deployment of an aircraft or a helicopter. So you always want to be careful. And what I tell people is that you set up the conditions for contact, you engage in the techniques, and then the ball is then in the ET's court as to how and when and where something happens.
But you say you were very early on in your career, you say that you made something like this happen, and there was indeed a contact event in your home city, in North Carolina, I think, and that actually sparked off what was what we would call a UFO flap, what the media calls a UFO flap, in that city. It caused multiple sightings.
Well, and the police helicopter was deployed to chase them. We have the audio tape. It's in the movie. It was taken from the FAA archives and given to me by a source I won't name. And yes, that was a CE5 event that happened in the 1970s after I had a contact experience with the ETs up in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And we sort of developed these protocols together, and they were very strange because the protocols involve things that most people would poo-poo and laugh at, because it involves consciousness and meditation and remote viewing and all of these things, which interestingly the mainstream science and media laugh at this, but no one's laughing at it at the CIA, because they have had their own remote viewing programs dating back to the 70s as well with great success. So as you have seen from Russell Targ,
Russell Targ, who I've had on my show a couple of times, you have Russell Targ making a very meaningful contribution to the whole thing.
He's wonderful, man.
He absolutely is. I've no idea how old he is now, but he is quite remarkable. So is the plan ultimately then to get enough of us around the world doing this? And then the ball is in the ET's court. What are they going to come in, do you think, and do?
I think if there's a critical mass of people that do this, it will actually alter the rest of society to pivot away from mythology, superstition, fear, hatred, and war. And at that point, the ETs will make open and direct contact. I mean, I've actually gotten information that that is what is very possible. It's not possible so long as you have some of the most powerful military interests in the world who have technologies that can track, target, and destroy these crafts. So we have some things that we need to resolve very quickly before this gets out of hand any further, which unfortunately the mainstream media, which is on the speed dial and on contract, many of them with the CIA, are the most culpable ones, frankly, in advancing this alien threat hoax.
Well, and by the way, I have to say that I worked for a lot of my life in mainstream media. I was never on speed dial to the CIA. I don't think they would entertain me. So the basis of it is then, and this is the exciting part, you know, I think you don't have to be a Philadelphia lawyer to know, and this is just in the last couple of minutes of this segment, Dr. Greer, you don't have to be a Philadelphia lawyer to know that this world, and I'm talking even pre-COVID and all of that, is riven with problems, is riven with political problems, is riven with poverty and strife and all sorts of things. Are you saying, and I suppose this is the kicker, and I think you are, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, that if we make this contact, they are going and they are itching to help us out with the state of this world?
Well, if we make contact and the subject is disclosed in a peaceful fashion, then the technologies that are in these black boxes will, a priori, be released, because the public is going to, the entire establishment, scientific and otherwise, is going to say, how the hell are these things operating? I have a handwritten letter from the head of the Skunk Works, Lockheed Skunk Works, Ben Rich. It says, yes, they're ET and they're ours, admitting that many of the UFOs people are seeing are ours, man-made. So, and of course, I've known this from the connections I had in my family with Northrop Grumman going back into the 50s and 60s, you know, because my uncle worked with Northrop Grumman. And I think that this is one of the things that, that would be the ultimate outcome, is that within an environment, if you set the milieu of peace, you can then have these technologies come out that can then be applied for peaceful purposes.
But the ultimate end of it all, if that contact is made, you think that this will be a better world? Who governs then? Do they govern us, or do we pick a new government for ourselves?
Oh, no, they wouldn't govern us. I mean, good God, they wouldn't want to be bothered. Who would? No, I think humans are going to have to come together with their own institutions. So certainly we would reform our whole concept of our place in the cosmos, which is a very big step. I mean, it's not just a political, it's theological, it's spiritual, it's a macroeconomic. All of these aspects of our society would change. But remember, within about 20 years of this all coming out, including the technologies, there would be no poverty or pollution on the planet, and we would be able to move on and become what we call a level one advanced civilization and could take our place out in space amongst the stars. That's what the potential is. Now, the alternative is to stay on the path we're on, and in which case, given all the problems you just illustrated very quickly, we're likely to enter into an extinction level event if we're not careful. So I think that there's a lot hanging in the balance here that needs to be addressed.
Dr. Greer, if I may just ask you a couple of questions from listeners. Long-time listener of my show, Jonathan, in Worthing, in the south of England,
yes.
Wanted me to ask you about some of the negative reviews that have come out about the documentary. Jonathan uses the word withering ridicule in one of them. How do you react? Because you know that some of the reaction has been that way inclined. How do you react to that? Do you just shrug it off? Is it water off a duck's back?
Well, no, I mean, in the marketplace of ideas, you're going to have that kind of ridicule. I remember back in 1973, 74, 75, when I was becoming a teacher of meditation, that, you know, everyone was ridiculed. It was ridiculous. Now, all the mind-body institutes and the use of biofeedback and the work that's been done in consciousness at Johns Hopkins and other places, it's gone absolutely mainstream in terms of wellness and yoga and meditation. But back then it was, of course, you know, we were all pilloried and ridiculed and put down. You expect that. I really understand it. This is what happens when you're doing something that's pushing the envelope.
So you're saying basically it goes with the territory.
It goes with the territory, and it doesn't offend me in the least.
Okay. Jonathan, I hope that answers your question. Lee asks this. I'm sure you'll have seen this. This was an international news story 3 or 4 weeks ago. A man in Israel called Chaim Eshed, or Chaim Esht, said that governments have been in contact with ETs for a number of years, even to the point when some of the top people visited a base on Mars. What did you make of that?
Well, I think he had some information that was correct. I'm not sure all of it was. One of the points he made was that the Trump administration, which was moving towards disclosing the subject, was waved off because of them being convinced there would be mass panic that would induce that. By the way, that canard, that red herring's been used since the 50s to ensure secrecy. And I think that certainly he had some information. I don't think all of it was accurate. I can confirm that a former head of the Army intelligence gave me detailed information that there were extraterrestrial facilities underneath the surface of Mars, but there was no indication that humans were actively involved with that. On the other hand, there have been humans that have used some of these advanced anti-gravity systems to go onto the moon, quite separate from the Apollo mission, and that we have had confirmed. I do not have any sources who have confirmed that we have ever gotten either teleported or used these so-called alien reproduction vehicles, these man-made anti-gravs to go to Mars. I'm very skeptical of the mythology that there's some component of humans and ETs working together. Most of the people I know who have observed that in underground bases have been encountering the objects that we call PLFs, programmed life forms, which are man-made ET appearing creatures that have been used in most of the abduction and mutilation events.
Question from me, and I've often wondered this in relation to you. I know that you knew Edgar Mitchell. I only got to speak with him once, Apollo astronaut. Taking the Apollo astronauts in general, those who you may have had some contact with, do you believe that they experience things on their missions, and in particular the lunar missions, but, you know, the Space Shuttle too, and the ISS, that a lot of them have experienced things that they do not talk about?
Yes, I know this for a fact. In fact, you know, because my uncle worked on the lunar module that landed on the moon in 1969, I got to know quite a few of the lunar, the moonwalkers, as you might say. Now, in the case of Edgar Mitchell, I do not believe he saw anything that he could point to as being UFO ET related. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin absolutely did. Actually Buzz Aldrin's sister told me very directly that he simply couldn't talk about it, but that everything I've said on that subject is true, meaning that when we landed, there were above the crater, I think this is in Timothy Good's book as well, above Top Secret, but I got this confirmed by the sister of Buzz Aldrin, and also the best friend of Neil Armstrong, who said that there were UFOs on the crater above where we landed, the Sea of Tranquility, and that this was known, and it was filmed, but it was not disclosed to the public. And that, in fact, when I invited Neil Armstrong to do the disclosure project with these other military and intelligence whistleblowers, his best friend got back to me and said that very bluntly, that if he were to do this, that he, his wife, his children, and his grandchildren would all be assassinated. And that was how it was said to me. So I understand that the threats and the pressures that people like that are under, and therefore, you know, I respect that, you know, that they have to stay in their lane because they've been intimidated.
And indeed, in the documentary, Dr. Greer, you do say, don't you? And indeed, you do get quite upset, understandably, at that point. You do say that a number of people that you have known and worked with over the years, you know, some of them have lost their lives.
Yes, in the early days, before we had really good security, which we have now, tactical security, there were some tragic events that happened with very close friends and people I was working with, but we're past that now. I'm not worried about it. I mean, I don't think, you know, there's no guarantee when you're dealing something like this and you're sort of enemy of the state. If you ever saw the movie Enemy of the State, by the way, with Will Smith.
One of my favorite movies, yes.
Oh, really? Well, you know, it's about the National Security Agency. People should go see it. The man who wrote that, the screenplay, David Marconi, is on our team. He's the man that took the picture of that ET that healed the man of his hearing up in Arizona a couple years ago. So, you know, he and I joke all the time that, unfortunately, I've become the enemy of the state. But you know, and the truth is that these astronauts, I've met with some shuttle astronauts as well. Most of them have not seen objects. It's not that it happens every single journey. Some have. But invariably, they understand that there would be repercussions to them acknowledging that publicly, at least at that time. Now, this may be changing. And I'm hoping it increasingly does change. And certainly this May will be the 20th anniversary of the National Press Club disclosure event in May 9th of 2001. In fact, we may do something again this year. Stay tuned on May 9th in Washington.
You say that you've briefed presidents over the years. Have you had a chance to make any communication with President Biden?
Well, of course, he just got installed. I have briefing materials that will go to him through people who can hand it off. I also did that for, you know, Trump and the others prior to. By the way, I'm extremely nonpartisan in my work in that regard. I've had to deal with all of them, left, right, center, whatever. But I did meet, you know, Biden, Carol Rosen and I during the disclosure project. Did provide materials to then Senator Biden when he was the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Because, of course, foreign relations, is there anything more foreign relations than interstellar? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So, but I have not seen any indication from, let's call it, establishment politicians of any stripe, left, right, or center, to take this issue on because, for the most part, they don't want to bite the hand that's feeding them, meaning that when you're talking about the entire banking, petrodollar, oil, gas, coal, utilities all being impacted by disclosing that these objects are real and that we know how they operate, and we do. Now, of course, it saved the environment. And of course, there's all this talk about a Green New Deal in America, but, you know, in truth, even when Al Gore was vice president, I met with his science advisor. And they knew that this subject was real, but he wouldn't touch the disclosure of this with a 10-foot pole, even though it was Al Gore who did An Inconvenient Truth about the dangers of global warming. So what I have found is that this is another example of why I think we, the people, need to come together and make contact, disclose the subject, and also eventually develop these technologies independent of government and large corporations, but do it in a way that's open source, like GitHub, where it's released without patents or intellectual property for the benefit of humanity.
Which brings us to a very useful point in our last few minutes here. What is the time scale for doing that? And are you confident that we're going to be able to?
Well, my time scale for doing that would have been around 1993-94. And I know people think I'm being cheeky. I'm not. When I was approached by the president's people, and I went to the Rockefeller Ranch, Lawrence Rockefeller hosted us, and then subsequently he hosted the Clintons, I had high hopes that not only would the subject be disclosed within the framework of peace and peaceful contact, but that the sort of the peace dividend of the trillions of dollars we've spent on these technology research programs since the 40s and 50s would be that we'd begin to bring out at least the energy generation systems, if not the propulsion systems. Propulsion systems obviously can be put on a missile, and it's a, it has clear military implications. But a stationary fixed thing that would run your house or car or power your factory with no pollution and no energy costs, those should have come out long time ago. And I had high hopes they would. But as I've said, because of the corruption of corporate financial power in politics here and all over the world, that hasn't happened. And therefore, in order for it to happen, you'd have to find some angel investors who would come together with some technologists and engineers and open source and develop these technologies and bring them out. We have not had the support. I mean, I can crowdfund an indie documentary, but we certainly can't crowdfund tens of millions of dollars in a high energy physics laboratory research project. So, you know, that's the thing that hasn't happened. It needed to happen, we knew, in the 90s, because we're running up there against the red line for the biosphere, the environment, pollution, et cetera, and so on. And also the poverty in the world. Most people don't realize almost half the world's population doesn't have indoor plumbing. The amount of poverty and just suffering in the world is completely can be fixed with these sciences and technologies is just enormous. So it's a humanitarian issue. But so far, we haven't gotten anyone to walk the talk, as it were.
Okay, so very finally, and thank you for giving me this time, this is a long-term project, and I saw in the documentary you've got a lot of supporters all over the world. I mean, you must have to have been able to fund the documentary. But you've got a lot of people still to reach, haven't you?
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do, and I appreciate your help getting the word out through your show, because this is very much a public education effort that needs to continue, and that's why I've welcomed, you know, Demi Lovato, who has about 95 million followers on Instagram, has gotten involved and has been lighting up her network. We're trying to have a lot of these influencers get the word out to the younger generation, you know, people who are my children's ages, because, you know, I started this project when I was the age of my children now. And now I'm 65, my children are in their 30s. And I feel like, you know, we need to move forward with this, with younger people who can do this. And many of them, fortunately, are very open to this and are helping us get the word out, since I am absolutely blacklisted by the mainstream media.
And, you know, look, this is it's important that people keep an interest in these things, whether you want to call them UFOs or not, and I know you don't, because an awful lot of the people who blazed the trail and pioneered all of this, you know, a lot of them have left us now. A lot of the first-hand experiences, we're losing them. So, you know, you have, as everybody else has, to interest and energize a whole new generation. Dr. Greer, thank you for giving me this time. Obviously, what you say is controversial. I know that people will want to feed back to me and possibly to you about this. But if people want to watch this documentary, and I recommend that they do, where would they get it?
Well, you can see it on Amazon Prime. You can rent it or buy it on Amazon and iTunes and Google Play and all over the world. And in the United States, you can even see it on Tubi without a subscription and some other sites. And if you want to learn how to do the CE5 contact protocols, there's an app that you can get called CE5 Contact, and it takes you right through the whole training process as well as what you need to form a team and to do it. And I would also add that we, you know, to just join us and follow us on our social media, if you can drop those links, as well as on our website, seriousdisclosure.com, you can sign up for our email newsletter that we send out a couple times a week, usually, to give you updates on what's happening around the world on the issue.
Well, I need to resubscribe because I think I'm not getting that now, so I must do that myself. Dr. Greer, thank you very much indeed. I know that we will talk again if you do that event on May the 9th. I'd love to speak with you again about that. But
oh, great. Maybe you can come.
Well, who knows if we're able to travel again. Maybe I just might, Dr. Greer. Thank you very much indeed. Always interesting, always controversial, Dr. Stephen Greer, making a return appearance after a few years to the unexplained. Your thoughts on all of that, welcome. And I meant it when I said to him that I would be absolutely willing to try some of this and see if I can make contact. And if I am able to make contact in all sincerity, then I will report it to you, just as I would equally report it to you if I couldn't make contact. You know, I have to admit that I've never been somebody who's susceptible to hypnosis and those sorts of things. I think my brain is just in too many different places at any one time. But I would certainly give it a try and see if this is for real and if I could do it. Your thoughts on this show, as I say, welcome. Go to my website, theunexplained.tv, and connect with me. More great guests in the pipeline here at The Unexplained Online. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained, and please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.